We're going to be in Ruth chapter 3 this morning, Ruth chapter 3. And as you head that direction, this chapter just picks up right where the other one left off. This book is a real historical type book. What I mean by that, it's like a running story all the way through. It's almost like reading a novel. And so there's not a whole lot of, trying to find locations or places. It's all right there. Just keeps going. So Ruth chapter 3 this morning, we're going to be looking at this, and the title of this lesson or message, I guess, is Going to the Threshing Floor. We're going to see where Ruth received some direction, and she followed it, and the Lord blessed her. So we're going to begin in verse 1. It says, "Then Naomi, her mother-in-law, said unto her, My daughter, shall I not seek rest for thee, that it may be well with thee? And now is not Boaz of our kindred, with whose maidens thou wast? Behold, he winnoweth barley tonight in the threshing floor. Wash thyself therefore, and anoint thee, and put thy raiment upon thee, and get thee down to the floor, but make not thyself known unto the man, until he shall have done eating and drinking. And it shall be, when he lieth down, that thou shalt mark the place where he shall lie, and thou shalt go in, and uncover his feet, and lay thee down, and he will tell thee what thou shalt do. She said unto her, All that thou sayest unto me I will do. And she went down unto the floor, and did according to all that her mother-in-law bade her. And when Boaz had eaten and drunk, and his heart was merry, he went to lie down at the end of the heap of corn, and she came softly and uncovered his feet and laid her down." So we're going to start there this morning at this point, and we're going to look at going to the threshing floor, and basically we're going to see where Ruth followed the direction of Naomi, and God blessed her. We're going to see that God blessed her, and we're going to see, really, it's a, as some put it, there is a romantic story here between Boaz and Ruth. A love story is what we find here right in the middle of the Bible, and it's real interesting. But anyway, as far as this past chapter, we're going to just break it down into three categories this morning. We're going to see the direction. We're going to see a date. Now, it's not the same type of dates we go on today, but it's what it was. Boaz and Ruth. And then we're going to see a dedication on the part of Ruth, and or Boaz, dedication, and on the part of Ruth. We're going to see some of that. So as far as the direction, verses 1 through 5 of Ruth chapter 3, the direction, Naomi, I want point out to start with, we're going to talk about the situation first. I want you to notice that Naomi was greatly concerned for Ruth. You know, I think throughout this entire book, we see a very selfless individual with Naomi. She'd been given a hard life, so to speak. She'd been dealt a difficult situation, losing her husband, losing her two sons, having no children, having no grandchildren. And on top of that, living in the society she lived in, she didn't live in 2014 where she could go out and get a job and take care of herself. She was living in poverty now. She was poor. And as we'll see, not only this week but also next week, it appears she had gotten rid of her land, or she didn't have the possession of the land that she once had with her husband and her family. And so she really had nothing in this world, or not much in this world. And so we find a very selfless individual. It could have been very easy for her to look at Ruth and say, how about you just stick with me and continue to provide and continue to take care? Instead, she encourages Ruth to move on with her life. And in this case, we're talking about marriage. I think in this chapter, we really do see a picture of marriage and the importance of marriage. And so we're going to be talking about that here as we go along. In verse 1, she says there, of 3, we've read it, she said, shall I not seek rest for thee, that it may be well with thee? Now, she used that word rest again concerning marriage. Now, she's not talking about sleep. She's talking about the relationship, the marriage relationship is what she's talking about. I think that's a good word to use for marriage. It's a state of rest as far as you think of this. When someone is married, there's no more wandering. There's no more single life. They're married. It's a state of rest. Also, a good marriage will produce a home where there's rest. You know, a good marriage will produce a home where you can go home to at night at the end of a busy day or end of a work day, or get away from the chaotic scene of the world. It doesn't have to be a large home or elaborate, just a home, a family. A marriage will produce that. A good marriage will produce that. You know, there are a lot of ungodly marriages, and the problems come with that as well. A good marriage is what we're talking about. So that's what Naomi was interested in for Ruth. She wanted her to have a place of rest or time of rest. So as far as, I want to teach a few things here as far as give a little bit of information that we don't find in the Bible. And when I say that, I'm not talking about new teaching. I'm talking about the culture a little bit, so we understand the situation. The culture was different than today, and that's what we need to understand to begin with. Women placed great importance on marriage. Now, I'm not saying women don't today, but it's not like it was then. I can guarantee you that. And actually, there are a lot of women who place no importance on marriage, or they just see it as, well, if I have time, I'll get married, or if I don't, things don't work out in my career, then I'll get married. Marriage for women was considered to be their fulfillment in life. And even today, many Jews still look upon it that way. That was part of their fulfillment in life. If they didn't marry, if they didn't have a spouse, then they weren't fulfilled. They weren't fulfilling what God had made them to be and giving, you know, I guess you say, as far as their purpose in life. Also for women, because they could not work and because they could not go out and own like today, marriage really provided stability and security. So for them, in this day, as far as women, it was a rest from burdens in this world. They knew their life would be taken care of. They knew that they would have a future. They knew that they would be cared for. And so it would provide some peace in their life. You know, women, for the most part, during this time, dreaded being alone and dreaded having no children, because that meant that they would have no security in life and no future as far as taking care of them. So, you know, it's interesting. In chapter 1, I think that's part of the reason why Orpah remained in Moab, because she knew there she could get married. Following Naomi to Israel, chances were slim of her ever getting married. And so I think she knew that staying there was a better situation as far as that was concerned. Now, before we move on, I do have to make some comments on this. You know, things have changed today. They really have. For many, you know, a lot of people look upon marriage as being a burden now. It's no longer looked upon as being a blessing. It's looked upon as being a burden. And so that's why I think a lot of people don't want to make that commitment, why they think that single life is better, because they see it as being a burden instead of a blessing. And for some, it's just an afterthought. Well, I'll think about it, or we'll see what happens. Also, I think, because women, now I want to clarify before I get into this too far and get myself in some trouble and have to dig myself out of a pit. I'm not against women working. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. But I think what's happened, because women are able to work and can take care of themselves, then the temptation has arisen for them just to say, well, I don't need marriage. I don't need a family. I don't need that, because guess what? I can do it all by myself. And so there is that temptation there. So I'm not against women working. I think, you know, I don't think the Bible is against that either. As long as it's a good, clean job, there's nothing wrong with that. But we must understand the importance of marriage and the blessings that are there for those that enter into that. So we find, I think, that women, if they're not careful, can lose sight of who they are, is the way I'll put it. Lose sight of how God has made them. In our society today, it's really dangerous for that. So the decline, I think, of morality in our country has affected marriage. And I'm not going to go any further into that, because I don't have time. And that's another lesson altogether. But I just wanted to point out the importance of marriage during this time. It was taken seriously, and it was something that they recognized as being very important. So we find here Naomi. She's encouraging Ruth, basically, to go to Boaz, as we'll see here in a little bit, and basically to ask Boaz to redeem her, to and we'll talk more about this redemption here in a minute. Ask Boaz to be her husband, basically, to be her redeemer. Now, Naomi knew this would be good for Ruth. Have you ever had someone that cared for you and they gave you some advice because they knew it would be good for you? That's what we find here. She knew Ruth would no longer have to work in the fields. She knew Ruth would have a secure future. And she knew, I believe by this point, that Boaz was a good man. And so she knew that Ruth would be taken care of. Also, you think on this, I think we find that Naomi, more than anything else as far as Naomi's concerned, she didn't confine Ruth, she didn't discourage Ruth, but she encouraged her. You know, it's always a blessing to have people that encourage and that help. In this case, Naomi was Ruth's mother-in-law. You know, I think she was more of a mother by now than she was a mother-in-law. Ruth had left her family in Moab, had followed Naomi here to Israel, to Bethlehem. And so I think Naomi was more of a mom now at this point than she was as far as being a mother-in-law. And let me give you some thoughts on this, parents. We can't arrange our children's marriages. I know some parents think that's, I don't know. You know, I used to hate that as a child. Now as a parent, it's like, oh, it wouldn't be not such a bad idea. But we can't arrange our children's marriages. But you know what? I think we can teach them, and we should teach them. We should teach them what to look for in a spouse. That's important, to what to look for. Also, we should teach them how to act in a marriage and what a proper marriage is. You see, many marriages fall apart simply because I think those involved are looking for the wrong thing. They're looking for something else. And once they're married and a few years go by and they realize it's not there, then there's all sorts of troubles there. And so we should teach our children what to look for in a marriage. Pay attention to characters. I guess that's what I'll say most importantly. Pay attention to character. That's what we should teach our young people. Pay attention to character. because looks will be gone someday. Right? You gotta admit it. You know, as we get older, looks will be gone someday, but character will remain and character will stand out. So pay attention to who people are. And that's something we should teach our children. Now, Naomi obviously was aware of Boaz. She points out here in verse 2, "And now is it not Boaz of our kindred, with whose maidens I was? Behold, he went with barley tonight in the threshing floor." So we find here, and I'm going to talk about another, I guess you say, law in their culture. Turn with me to Deuteronomy chapter 25. I want to point this out because this is important for us to understand as we get ready to just run through this chapter real quick. Deuteronomy chapter 25, and notice what it says in verse 5. We begin reading. "If brethren dwell together and one of them die, have no child, the wife of the dead shall not marry without unto a stranger. Her husband's brother shall go in under her, take her to him to wife, and perform the duty of a husband's brother under her. And it shall be that the firstborn which she beareth shall succeed in the name of his brother which is dead, and his name be not put out of Israel. And if the man like not to take his brother's wife, then let his brother's wife go unto the gate, unto the elders, and say, My husband's brother refuseth to raise up unto his brother a name in Israel, he will not perform the duty of my husband's brother. Then the elders of his city shall call him and speak unto him, and if he stand to it and say, I like not to take her, then shall his brother's wife come unto him in the presence of the elders and loose his shoe from off his foot, spit in his face, and shall answer and say, So shall it be done unto that man that will not build up his brother's house. His name shall be called in Israel, the house of him that hath his shoe loose." Now, we have a couple laws we're going to look at over the next few weeks, today and also next week, and here's one of them. And this concerns marriage. We're also going to look in Leviticus, it talks about land, redeeming land of one who has also passed away. Now, we're going to talk first on this. As far as this is concerned, what we have is we have a law put in place in Israel, basically to protect widows and also to protect the land. Basically, you know, God had given the land to Israel. God had divided it up by family. In the law, we find every 50 years, you know, if you messed up, if you had a piece of land that was divided and given unto you from your family, and say you messed up, say you went out and made some poor business decisions, and you just lost that land and you had to just give it up. According to the law, every 50 years, that land had to be returned to the family. So you could mess it up. You did it late in life, you may not see that land again, but your children would see it. They'd get it back, and they'd be able to work. That was the year of Jubilee, as it was called. Every 50 years, it would go back to the right way. And that basically protected the people from landmongers, from people wanting to be greedy and taking everything. And so what happened is we find that this was put in place to, basically this law and the law in Leviticus was put in place to protect the people. And so what we have here is basically a law that concerned brothers. And some say, well, there's no indication extended beyond that, and it probably didn't. But most would carry it further. What I mean by that is if they wanted the land and they wanted to redeem it, then they had to also redeem any widow that was on the land. In other words, marry them and become the husband to redeem them. And so that was the law that was put in place. So we find it was put there for protection. And we find that Naomi reminded Ruth about this. Now think about Ruth for a minute. She's from Moab. She didn't grow up probably reading the Bible or the Old Testament. She didn't have any of this knowledge. And here she is, and she's probably unsure, and Naomi tells her, no, he's our kindred. You know, that's the situation. Now, we also know a few things here before we move on. Boaz had been kind to Ruth. I think Boaz had already shown that he was interested in her, without a doubt. He'd been kind, he'd been generous. He told all his workers to take care of her throughout the entire several months of the harvest. I think we have a man who, what's that, love at first sight? We have a man who just fell in love with her as a person and just was, you know, showing that he cared. Now, so what we have is basically it was Ruth's turn to return that thought, so to speak. What I mean by that is if Ruth didn't say anything or just moved on, then Boaz would probably move on. According to the Bible, it was Ruth's responsibility to ask to be redeemed. See, we don't find any, and this is where some people get confused. We're not reading a situation where Boaz could just walk in and say, I'm going to redeem you, you're going to, because of the relationship. Ruth had to agree to this. It wasn't like she was forced into any of this. This was her responsibility now, to be redeemed if she would choose to. And that's what Naomi's telling Ruth. Say, you know, he's our kinsman, so to speak. He's the one that is able to provide the redemption for the family. And so Naomi tells here in verse 2, it says, "And now is not Boaz of our kindred, with whose maidens I was? Behold, he went with barley tonight in the threshing floor. Wash thyself therefore, anoint thee, put thy raiment upon thee, get thee down the floor. Make thyself not known unto the man until he shall have done eating and drinking. So we have some practical instruction. We have a strategy put in place by Naomi. I see Naomi, she's a very intelligent woman. She's going to help Ruth out, and she knows, I guess she's a matchmaker, so to speak. She could see that there is some interest there, and she's going to help things out. And it was all according to the Lord's will. The Lord allowed all this. And we find that she said he's going to be on the threshing floor tonight. And I got a picture up here of a modern-day threshing floor. Actually, what it is, it's a kind of a, it's modern day, of course, the picture, but what it is, they built it so that way it would appear how threshing floors looked years back. And basically, we have a threshing floor here, and they were large, usually circular in shape, and during the harvest, these were places of great activity, especially for landowners. They would have several, sometimes they'd have one or two large ones in the center of their field, sometimes they'd have a couple, and basically, they would go there at the end of the day or in the evenings, and they would thresh their wheat, and they would get their grain out, is what they do. And a lot of times, they would have, families would go, and they would pretty much set up camp there. Because whenever you have, and you know, things haven't changed a whole lot, whenever you have materials, you're also going to have thieves. You're also going to have those that would come and take things away and cause trouble. And so, from my understanding, when they would thresh the wheat, a lot of times they'd work late into the night, so they would stay there overnight. Not just one person, but sometimes groups of them would stay there and they'd sleep all around the threshing floor to protect the wheat, the barley, the wheat, and the grain that they had just worked so hard to get. And so we find here, evidently, that's what Boaz was doing. He was working into the night, having a feast afterwards, and he was going to remain there. So that's where he was. You know, another thought on Boaz is we find a man who was a hard worker. You know, he didn't leave it for someone else. He did his best and he worked hard. Now, let's notice some of this practical direction by Naomi. She told her first, and she gave her some explicit direction. She told her to prepare herself. She said, wash yourself. Now, I don't think Ruth was a filthy person, but she'd been working in the fields. That's what she'd been doing for months. And she says, wash yourself, anoint yourself, put on nice clothes, and dress properly. You know, here's some thoughts on this. I think this is important. Appearance is important. You know that it is important. Now, appearance is not everything, and appearance should not be the basis of our kindness. James makes that very clear. We should not form an opinion or treat someone differently because they appear nice. The Bible makes that clear. But how we appear tells a lot about how we live or how we care about ourselves, really. It does. You see, if you care less about your appearance, it probably carries over into other areas of your life. If you just don't care about how you look, then it probably carries over into how you do business or maybe how you do other things. I read where one man said this, failure to dress up indicates a serious lack of interest. That's what it does. You know, how about going to a job interview and not dressing appropriately? All those doing the interview would come to this belief right here, that you just have no interest. That maybe you're there just to be there or for whatever reason, but you're really not interested in this job or not serious about it. And so we find that when you go to interviews, you dress appropriately. When you go to work tomorrow morning, you're probably going to dress appropriately. When people, and men or women, or go out on a date, they dress appropriately. You prepare yourself. By the way, when we go to church, we should dress appropriately as well. You know, I like to put it this way. The world gets it. Why can't we as believers? You know, I think the believers are going the other way. They're trying to dress down going to church. It just shows a serious lack of interest in the things of God. We should dress our best. Now, that's not to say you go out and dress elaborately, but you dress your best. I think we should dress our best. So we find here that she was to prepare herself to go, and she did that. And then she was to go to the threshing floor. We've read that. I'm not going to stop or go into, I guess, too much details here, but she was to go to the threshing floor. That's where Boaz would be because he'd be working that night. Naomi knew that. Notice where she was not sent. She wasn't sent to a nightclub. And I got you looking now. I got your attention. You know, where you find your spouse is going to be a good indication of the kind of spouse you're going to have. Teach your children that. You know, look for them in the correct place. Now, that's not to say that they won't ever be saved, but you know, you go looking for a spouse in some areas, you're just going to get what you find, basically, is the teaching. She went to where he was staying, where he was working, and there she was to basically given some direction. She was to go and find where he would sleep, mark the place when he'd go into sleep later. She was to go lay down at his feet. And notice she was to wait for him. She was to wait for him. You notice, I want to point this out here. It says at the end of verse 3, thyself unto the man until he shall have done eating and drinking. So she was to be patient and to wait. Ladies, I'll give you a little bit of advice. The Bible seems to tell us here it's best to talk to men after they've eaten. And that's probably true. You know, after they've come home, the best time is probably not right when they get home. Best time is to let some food get in there and get settled and then address some serious issues. Well, she was to wait for this situation, and the Bible tells us that she did. Now, before we move on, I want to make some comments on this. We're not told that this is how we're to find a spouse. You see, the Bible, this is not given to us as far as our direction. It's given to us as far as what occurred. What I mean by that, apparently that was part of the practice during that day. And there's no indication at all, or there's no implication that that's how we're to practice and that's how we're to do things. You know, cultures have rituals. Different cultures have rituals that to others appear to be suspicious, and sometimes they may even appear to be foolish. You know, we may look and say, well, what's she going up there? And sometimes they may be appear, and I'm going to say appear. They may appear to be immoral or impure. You know, some would say, well, what's she going up there by herself with a man? You know, today, yeah, it's different today in our day and age with all the dangers that are out there and all the accusations, yes. I think it's wise for a woman not to put herself alone with a man and so forth and vice versa. But during this day, time was different. John Gill put it this way, what things in one age and in one nation are considered immodest are not so accounted in another age and in another nation. And we have to understand that when we're reading the Bible. We're not 2014, it was then. And so we just need to understand that. Here's some thoughts on this though. There was nothing wrong. Neither of them did anything, as we'll see here, immorally. There was no impurity of any kind. Both evidently were good, God-seeking individuals. And also, and I mentioned earlier about the threshing floors, about the how they were packed and how they were. This was a public setting. You know, it wasn't like she went to Boaz's house. He was all by. This was a public setting. On our next picture, I'm going to get ahead so we can see it real quick. This is another picture of the threshing floor. And a lot of them had places along the sides where people could camp out, and some would even camp out further. You know, you could just imagine Boaz staying in a place like that. We're not talking about a private setting. This was a public setting. Now, once everyone went to sleep, of course, it was quiet. And, you know, sin can happen anywhere, obviously. But we don't find them going out in a private setting. And so what we find more than anything else is them, too God-fearing, as we'll see here in a minute, and following the advice of Naomi. So we find here, in Ruth 6, verse 13, we see the date, and we're going to see some determination on Ruth's part. You know, I don't think this was something easy to do. I imagine she was nervous. What if he said no? What if Naomi was wrong? And he got upset? You know, I imagine a lot of those things went through her mind. They would have to. Here she is from another country. And yes, she may have felt like Boaz was interested in like it, but you know, that always crosses your mind. And so we find here, we're in Ruth chapter 3. Notice in verse 6, it says there, she went down to the floor, did according to all that her mother-in-law bade her. When Boaz had eaten and drunk his heart was merry, he went to lie down at the end of the heap of corn. She came softly and covered his feet and laid her down. Came to pass at midnight that the man was afraid, turned himself, and behold, a woman lay at his feet. So we have Ruth first, her obedience. She followed the advice. I think it was good advice in this case, obviously. You know, there's nothing wrong with giving advice and receiving good advice. As long as it's not contrary to God's word, then it's good to follow advice. You know, I think some marriages have gotten in trouble because you have two extremes. Some have gotten in trouble because of poor advice, but then you have some that have gotten in trouble because they've received good advice, they just fail to apply it. And in this case, she got some good advice and she followed after it. So we have her going, and the Bible says that she waited for Boaz to eat, waited for him to go to bed. So he enjoyed the festivities. He had a good time. He was content. The Bible tells us that's what that word merry means. He was content. He had his full. And so he's turning in for the night. And the Bible makes it very clear that she was patient. She was willing to wait for the right time. You know, I think if I was going to bring a lesson to young adults, now, I know some of you are young in here, but single adults, I'd give them two thoughts on this right here. First, wait for the right person. That's what Ruth did. She waited for the right person. She just didn't go out traveling the world looking to marry somebody. She waited for the right person and waited for God to work, and God did. You know, God can work. God can bring the right people into our life at the right time. That's what she did. Secondly, she waited for the right time. You know, that's important too, waiting for the right time. Timing is everything. And here she followed Naomi's advice and she waited for the right time. And so we're going to see that everything worked out well. So she went, placed herself at his feet. The Bible says she went softly. She's quiet. She wasn't looking for any attention. She's trying to get in there. And then she uncovered his feet, lied down there. And the Bible tells us he was asleep and that he awoke. He was startled. Now, it doesn't tell us what he was thinking, but I'm going to give you a few thoughts on this. Being with the grain, that's where he was. He'd worked all night. He was with the grain. I imagine his thoughts may have been with thieves or robbers or problems or troubles. Now, they didn't have all the lighting like we have today. Now, you get outside of Little Rock a ways, you get out in the country, that's what it was more like. Unless, you know, you may have some nights where the moon's a little bit brighter, but they didn't have as much lighting, so I imagine when he awoke, he didn't know who this was. He didn't know what was going on, and so it startled him. And the Bible says that Ruth identified herself immediately. It says there, where we find here, it says in verse 9, "Who art thou?" She answered, "I am Ruth, thine handmaid. Spread therefore thy skirt over thine handmaid, for thou art a near kinsman." So we have her identifying herself as Ruth, his handmaiden. And here's what I want to just point out. Notice what she said. It's a phrase here. She asked for him to spread his skirt over her. Now the translation, the word can be translated as skirt. Ruth chapter 2, verse 12, they translate it into wing. Basically what we have here is she's not asking, we're not talking about anything immodest. She's not asking for blanket. She's asking here for her, because notice what she says next here in verse 9. "Therefore thy skirt over thine handmaid, for thou art a near kinsman." You know what she's asking? She's asking to be redeemed. She's asking for him to marry her, basically. Now, I think he'd already shown all the interest, and things are a little bit different than today. You know, today men may get on their knee with a ring, but this is what she's saying. She's saying that she would accept him, and she's asking for him to redeem her. And basically, she's saying, I want to be under your protection. I want to be under your wing. I want to be under your authority. In other words, she basically, here's how J. Vernon McGee put it. He said it was a figure of speech that implied she would accept his marriage proposal, is basically what it was. And so that's the direction she has. Now, I think when you look here, Naomi gave some good advice. Ruth followed it. And here's some thoughts on this. Notice it was done privately. It's very romantic when you look at the whole passage. It wasn't done in public. She wasn't demanding, saying, "I want you to redeem me. You know, you owe me this." I think we find a woman who loved him, and he loved her. And so we find a good passage on that. Also, two thoughts before we move on. They both handled themselves correctly in this entire passage. He didn't get upset at her for being there. Actually, I think it appears the contrary. He was glad. He was excited that she was there. And also, he acted in an appropriate manner the entire time. And same with her. She didn't entice him with words. She didn't try to do anything like that. She acted with great modesty is what she did. And so we have a wonderful, and I don't have time this morning to really get into it, but we have a wonderful picture here of marriage, the marriage proposal. Now, verse 10 through 13, let's notice the decision of Boaz. He said, "Blessed be thou of the Lord, my daughter, for thou hast showed more kindness in the latter end than at the beginning, inasmuch as thou followest not young men, whether poor or rich. And now, my daughter, fear not. I will do to thee all that thou requirest, for all the city of my people doth know that thou art a virtuous woman. And now it is true that I am thy near kinsman. Howbeit, there is a kinsman nearer than I." So everything is going well for Ruth, so to speak. And Boaz praises her before the Lord. Now, he's not giving any undue praise. I think we find a man who's excited right now. And we find that he praised her for who she was. Notice, here's what I want to point out real quick. Notice what it says at the end of verse 11. "For all the city of my people doth know that thou art a virtuous woman." Now, here's what I want to point out to you. She had a testimony, a good testimony. We're talking about a young woman that came from another country. Now, the Israelites weren't keen on accepting just strangers into the... it wasn't a religion that proselyted. They didn't go out. Now, they accepted if someone wanted to serve God and worship God. We find that they were accepted. But we have Ruth coming in from Moab with Naomi. And Naomi's poor. Ruth's poor because she's with her. I can imagine, and remember in chapter 1 it tells us that there was a big scene when Naomi returned. Everyone was there asking what had happened. Where she'd been for 10 years. Where was her husband, her sons, and so forth. I imagine Ruth was probably scrutinized a little bit. What I mean by that is I imagine she was probably placed under the microscope. They probably watched her and observed her. And you know what they found? The Bible tells us they found her to be a virtuous woman. They found that, guess what? She was in the right place at the right time. When it was time for work, she went to work. When work was over, she wasn't out getting in trouble. She was back home. When she got her money for what she made, she took care of Naomi and herself and took care of their needs and provided. She wasn't out trying to cause problems or trying to live in a way that was immoral. We find a woman of Bibles is a virtuous woman. And Boaz says all the people of the city knew it. What a testimony this woman had. And that's what stood out with Boaz. See, he was interested in her character, what kind of woman she was. And that's the kind of woman she was, a lady, is what we find out here. Now notice what it says next. And now it is true that I am thy near kinsman, howbeit there is a kinsman nearer than I. Now there are two thoughts that I have here with this, that either Naomi was not aware of this, and that's possible. That's why she sent Ruth. She didn't know that there was another kinsman that was nearer. Or there are some who believe that maybe Naomi did know. And that's why Boaz had kind of hesitated, didn't act. And basically, Naomi wanted Ruth to let Boaz know that she was interested in him. And then that way Boaz would act, as we'll see in the next chapter, where he acts to redeem her immediately. And maybe that's the case as well. Either way, there is someone. There is someone else that the Bible tells us is the nearest kinsman. And that's what Boaz pointed out. In other words, he wanted to marry her. He wanted to redeem her, but he couldn't. There was a little bit of a hitch, a little bit of a problem there. But he was going to do all that was required to take care of it, as we'll see. You know what we find? We find a man who loved Ruth, is what we find. He's going to do all that he could to take care of it. Now, some of you may remember when you were dating your spouse, and I tell you what, you probably wanted to do everything. Open the door, close the door, help out, and actually wait till they're in to close the door, and so forth. And we find that with Boaz. Here he is. He's going to take care of things, as we'll see in the next chapter. But basically, there was a kinsman who was nearer than him. And here's some thoughts I'll give you concerning Boaz. We find a very honest man. He was not deceptive. He was not going to try to work a way around this. But he was going to deal with it. And he made it clear to her that he loved her, or that he would marry her. He says in verse 13, let him do the kinsman's part, but if he will not do the part of a kinsman to thee, then will I do the part of a kinsman to thee as the Lord liveth, lie down until the morning. So he tells her, if he doesn't act, I will. So Ruth knew now that he cared for her. Ruth knew now that he would redeem her if given the opportunity. So we find that she was encouraged to wait there. Notice what he says. Verse 14, she laid his feet until the morning. She arose up before one could know another, and he said, let it not be known that a woman came into the floor. So we find here verses 14 through 18 that we're going to see Ruth leave, and we're going to see the dedication here. First, we find that she arose early in the morning, still dark out of evidently, or a lot of people still sleeping anyway. And she was, notice Boaz, I think this was probably a wise decision. He told her not to let anyone know that she was there. And two thoughts on this that I have. First, their testimonies. You know, maybe that's why. Maybe just to main testimony. But here's another reason. Maybe because of what he was about to do, we'll see in the next chapter, he's going to go down to the gate of the city, basically the town court, the center of the city, and he's going to attempt to redeem her. And maybe he knew that if people knew she was there, that would create problems. And so maybe that's why it was too. Either way, he told her. And before she left, notice, he awarded her. It says here, verse 15, also he said, bring the veil that thou hast upon thee, and hold it. And when she held it, he measured 6 measures of barley, laid it on her, and she went into the city. When she came unto her mother-in-law, she said, who art thou, my daughter? And she told her all that the man had done to her. And she said, these 6 measures of barley give he me, for he said to me, go not empty unto thy mother-in-law. Then said she, sit still, my daughter, until thou know how the matter will fall. For the man will not be in rest until he have finished the thing this day. So we have Ruth being awarded. We have him, Boaz, being generous to Ruth and giving her not just some, but 6 measures of barley to take home that night. And, you know, probably to send one, of course, to be generous, but also probably it was probably a message to Naomi, too. She would see the amount and so forth and realize that it was not just that he did care for her, that it wasn't something that he was just sending her away. But it was something that he cared for her. So we find her saying that. And now here's the last thought I'll give to you. Patience. Have you ever had to wait for something? We all have to wait. Now some things are easier than other things. Could you imagine Ruth at this moment? She had just pretty much shared her heart with Boaz. Found out that Boaz cared for her as well. But now she had to wait. Because there was, I guess you say, a hitch in the plan. There was a problem there. And so she had to wait. And we find that she arrived back and she shared with Naomi all that had occurred and everything that had taken place. But I want to just end this morning in verse 18. It says, where she said, "Sit still, my daughter, until thou know how the matter will fall." I imagine Ruth was probably pacing, walking around the house. And she said, "Sit still. Just sit down and wait until you know how the matter will fall." There are a few things we find here. Ruth may have been anxious or nervous, may have been excited and emotional, and she just had to wait for the Lord to work. It was out of her hands. That's all she could do, was just wait. You know, sometimes that's all we can do as well. And it may not be the same situation, but there may be times in our life that's all we can do. We've taken care of everything. Now think about Ruth. She did all she could. Now it was out of her hands, and she just had to wait. You know, waiting is difficult, but sometimes it's necessary. We just got to wait for God to work. And as you wait, just be faithful and continue serving the Lord. Here, in this case, she had to wait. And she was to remain calm, I think. She says, "Sit still, my daughter." She's to remain calm because Naomi knew that Boaz would take care of the situation. And that's how she ends it. "For the man will not be in rest until he have finished the thing this day." She knew now that Boaz cared for Ruth. And I imagine she knew now that Boaz would go immediately and take care of all the situation. The matter would be settled. No matter what would happen, he would settle it. So either way, Ruth would know an answer by the end of the day. You know, in closing this morning, let me give you some thoughts on this. There's a lot here. There's just a lot. I want to leave you with a thought on the importance of marriage. The importance of marriage. We find here, now they're not married yet, but we find here, I think, a good example of a couple looking to be married. And if you'll notice that the Lord worked all this out. The Lord allowed this. But they both found an individual that they had waited for. They both were blessed. And they both did things the right way, I guess you say, the correct way. And God would bless. You know, there's a lot to be said for doing things the right way. You go about doing things the right way. You're willing to wait. You're willing to be patient. And allow the Lord to bless. And He will. He will work. And He will bless. And we also find this will lead right into our next chapter. Because what we're going to find next week, we're going to talk about redemption. And we're going to talk about the law found in Leviticus 25, where a land could be redeemed, but everything with that land redeemed. And Boaz was going to provide the redemption. Now, Ruth wanted to be redeemed. So next week, what we're going to do is talk about the chapter, and I'm going to finish out the book with a lesson with pictures of redemption on Christ. This book provides pictures of redemption concerning sinners and concerning a Savior. We see Boaz and we see Ruth, and we're going to see how the picture is there, how Christ has provided redemption for sinners, just like Boaz was going to provide a redemption for Ruth. Now, one thing I do want to point out, we find in this chapter, is Ruth wanted to be redeemed. That's what we need to point out. You know, nobody will be saved if they have no desire to be saved. We could be the best witnesses in the world. We could know the Bible inside and out. We can share with them. But if they have no desire to know God, to seek God, then that's between them and the Lord. And we should pray for them. We don't give up on them. We pray for them. But you see, salvation is a personal matter. Redemption is something. Ruth wanted to be redeemed. She wanted to be redeemed, and she wanted to be blessed. And so we find her going, and we're going to find how the Lord works. We're going to see how the Lord works and how Ruth was blessed.